I think that because it was extremely nichey when we got into the game, and my goal was, hey, this is really cool stuff. Why doesn't everybody in America know about it? And so it was important to me, and it was something that I prioritized to introduce what's cool about Japan and Japanese pop culture to as many people as I could get a hold of. And so I think that effort combined with some other people who felt similarly, I think a few of us, our efforts did end up kind of tipping it a little bit. And at the same time, the internet started to really go broad, and a lot of people who would get kind of interested would search themselves. And so there was a big wave that I think got created. Pokemon eventually was invented, and that got a whole bunch of people into it. Yu-Gi-Oh followed up. You know, there's so many things that started to happen at the same time. So maybe it was the zeitgeist, you know?
It may well have been. But in respect to your company specifically, I mean, one might say that Tokyo Pop was an almost, you know, many in the mid to late 2000s may have commented to the extent basically saying that Tokyo Pop was going to become the Atari of the anime manga, you know, thing, this cultural icon that just has fallen. But yet, despite that, Tokyo Pop has risen like a phoenix in the last couple of years. I mean, what happened to Tokyo Pop that in its, you know, to bring it down to the low point where it was nearly forgotten, and then what brought it back? You know, what do you think, you know, tells that story?
Well, it's complicated, Special K. I would say that it's not something that I can in one sentence sum up, but I do believe that, first of all, Tokyo Pop is really kind of, I mean, I'm not going to say my alter ego because there's an incredible team of people, of talented people that have all contributed to what Tokyo Pop is. So Tokyo Pop is way beyond just me. But it is my baby. I'm sort of the parent of the thing. And so there is this little baby, and then all these incredibly talented people taught the baby many things, and then the baby grew up to be a talented individual that also had to go through, and I still think is kind of coming out of times of darkness and times of, you know, I don't know, emotional angst, and as a teenager learning, you know, who this baby can become eventually as an adult. And so I think that Tokyo Pop, is basically what happened is we got hit really, really hard by the transition from analog media to digital media. So disruption hit us very hard. And our company was based on putting out a number of books, quite a lot of books at the time. And those books were, there were some big hits, you know, like Fruits Basket or Love Hina or some things like that. And then there were a lot of titles that I think sold not, I'd say 3, 4, 5, 6,000 units, you know, which is by no means a huge number. But those were kind of what you would consider in the entertainment business singles. And what happened was once digital came along, it was very difficult to sell those books into bookshops because bookshops were hurting and they couldn't stock everything, and then they had to return their product, and they got squeezed more and more, and people were starting to use their phones and iPads. And of course, I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about piracy. A lot of factors were hitting us, and we also had a lot of competition that had cropped up that we didn't have in the beginning. Other companies were like, hey, let us do manga. And so these things hit us on all sides, and we had always were trying to evolve and do different stuff, but it was tough to transition from a physical only business to a digital business. And we kind of got caught with our pants down, trying our hardest to pull our pants up.
Indeed. But what do you think was the thing that made Tokyo Pop unique? Because there were many who fell, you know, in this period of time. Raijin Comics being some of you all may know of this company. It was a, you know, it brought in a lot of the real indie manga that was very popular in the late 90s, early 2000s in Japan. You know, today virtually no one knows about Raijin anymore. You know, I mean, what do you think was so special? What do you think just made Tokyo Pop the thing that, you know, that may get knocked down, but it's never out.
Well, there, and I'm also mentioned there are some other classics like ADV. Pablo was, you know, they've went through a similar thing. Central Park Media. There were a number of us who went through these challenges, but my, you know, at that time, and this was, it was really 2011 when at the end of the day, I kind of looked at the abyss and saw that there is really no going around it or running back. It was, you dive into it and you just hope that there's going to be something to jump onto at some point. And I guess from my point of view, I feel like I have the, I don't want to give up unless like I'm beaten to death. You know, it's just something that it's just in my nature. I'm a endurance athlete. I'm a persistent individual and, annoy many people by being persistent. And so I guess I just, didn't want Tokyo Pop to completely go away. Unless it was totally out of my hands.
Right on. But not only are you involved with Tokyo Pop, you've been involved with many other ventures as well. Two of them being prominently being Inker and M-Asia. Would you like to tell my audience a little bit about these operations?
Yeah, sure. Inker is a company, a startup based in Japan that is creating – basically a location-based art mobile service. And so if you show up in Tokyo and you're curious where the coolest art is, and that can be anything from street art to galleries to pop culture, you would open up the Inker app and it will guide you to some really cool art. And then if you find art, you can upload it as well. And it's starting in Tokyo and then it will take on other cities. And they're just coming out of their incubation right now. So hopefully, they'll be live pretty soon, but I advise that startup. M-Asia is actually a part of the Asia Society and it's devoted to, cultural, it's seminars and panels and, symposiums about Asian pop culture, China and American film being kind of the big thing they've done, but They're also looking at doing a Japan event pretty soon. So I've been an advisor to that. That is a nonprofit. I also do quite a lot of work for a nonprofit called the PGA, the Producers Guild of America. And we focus on international production and filmmakers, television shows and other sort of more traditional Hollywood as well as digital. And my role in that is chairing international. So I pull together filmmakers from around the world and try to basically connect them and facilitate co-productions. So those are some of the things that I do.
Very nice. Well, I mean, considering all these things, you know, you're in the Producers Guild of America, you know, you're an advisor to M-Asia, and then, you know, you're working with Inker in Tokyo Pop. I mean, what are your thoughts on anime and manga in America? I mean, you've spoken a lot in the past, but what do you think of it now? I mean, especially with, you know, the rise of the major cons, you know, now we have so many since the days Tokyo Pop was founded. And we are now with Anime Central, Anime Expo, Anime Next, Otakon, KatsuCon, and Anime USA. I mean, what do you think about with the cons now becoming showing the great interest of it, the this kind of, dare I say, otaku, although I use that term mildly.
Sure.
This cultural explosion, what do you think about that in terms of anime and manga, just what it is today?
I think it's incredible. It's kind of like beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I certainly, you know, at one point we had the phrase a manga in every backpack, but it's beyond manga. It's beyond anime. It really is the cultural phenomenon, I think, of young people across, and not just young people, there's, you know, parents and families and children. And, you know, it's as geek culture in general has become accepted, because we all had to hide in the closet back in the day, you know.
Oh,
that
yes.
Was right. And so, I mean, I remember being like 22 and walking down the streets of Las Vegas when I went to a Comdex, and Comdex was this huge computer conference at the time, and I was doing some work with computers and technology. And I remember a couple of us walking down the street and these guys driving down the car yelling, "Geeks!" You know, and that type of scene played, I think, for a number of us many times, whether it comes to computer technology or anime or superheroes or whatever your flavor of geekdom. And now because I think of the credibility of things like Marvel, the success of course, you know, not just Pokemon, but Hello Kitty and so many Japanese icons like that. You don't have to hide the fact that you're into something that's geek related. And so for those of us who are into Japan and into Asia and the pop culture that comes out of it, and for everyone now in the, you know, who's cosplaying and showing their creativity and enjoying with their friends and, you know, putting on performances together and just all the really creative and passionate manifestations of your, you know, of everyone's hobby, of everyone's fandom. I think that is, this is the time, you know, it's nobody has to hide anymore. And people can be respected and even popular, become popular based on what they do. There's always going to be the haters and always going to be people who are negative and criticizing and people who aren't into geek culture. But right now, those guys are in the minority, so we can enjoy our time in the sun.
Indeed. But on this subject of our time in the sun, I mean, what do you think about the future of this in America, this phenomenon?